Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we try to connect the dots along the path to awakening, if we can. Trying to pull all of the disparate pieces together to try to find maybe whatever this map will reveal. It's like the Marauder's map in Harry Potter.
I suppose it is, but we try not to make big leaps and big generalizations, because a lot of times as you follow this news, you're like, oh, okay, well then if this is true, then this guy's bad, or this country is bad. And, you know, the world is just such a complicated place. We try not to make those simplifications. But we still have threads to pull. What do you say? Strings to pull.
So we've got a lot of strings to pull tonight on this Tuesday edition.
That's not what that is. Like, you pull the thread.
Pull a thread.
Yeah.
Yeah, pull a thread.
Strings to pull means you're getting favors from somebody. We're getting favors from nobody. Not even the algorithm on the platform you're watching us on. So we're glad you're here. We're going to get to it. Sorry.
All right. So we've got some threads to pull on the show tonight. We've got a lot to get to. So President Biden announcing that he's running for 2024 re-election. He will be the presidential candidate of choice for the Democratic Party on the same day that the President Biden is basically telling the president of Ukraine, you better launch this spring offensive now against Russia or we're done. You're screwed. And at the same time, getting ready to launching war games against China. So that's what President Biden's up to. We'll cover all of those angles on the show.
And north of the border, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is victory lapping over his oh-so-sensitive handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. He says he's always been really sensitive to differing views on vaccination. That's a lie. We're going to roll back the tape.
And also, why are Israelis fighting and dying in Ukraine? That's a story you probably haven't heard. No one is talking about this story. Why is Israel in Ukraine fighting alongside of Ukrainians? It makes no sense at all. But we're going to get to the bottom of that story and more as Redacted starts right now. Welcome into Redacted. I love Nightwatch N8 in our chat says, hey, Redacted is complaining about censorship when they have 1.8 million subscribers. That's rich. First of all, hold on. Let me just finish. Those things have nothing in common. We have millions of subscribers and we still get actively censored. So we've been blocked and banned and stricken by YouTube over four times.
Yeah.
For covering COVID, for covering the Ukraine war. There are things that actively get taken down and blocked on our channel. Comments get deleted. So what does having 1.8 million subscribers have to do with our hatred of censorship? I cannot wrap my head around that. You just blew my mind. You just blew my mind, Nightwatch.
Again, we're talking about overgeneralizations. We're talking about the rules that we have to follow. The ways we title our videos can get them up or down ranked. And each individual video can be subject to any manner of punishment if we do not toe the line of establishment narrative. So yes, that is true. But you're here. Those of you who are here right now, if you hit the like button, you help that algorithm act more favorably to us, and we appreciate you doing this. But because we know that it is no sure thing that we are allowed on any platform these days, we have a newsletter as well, and we'd like to tell you about that. It is meant as a companion program to this show. It is a daily news email. It's free. You just put in your email address, and then you'll get an authenticating email, and you click to authenticate, and then you're off to the races. So not only does it have a lot of the same news that we cover here, it has more. Plus, it is our way to communicate with you outside of any normal censorship channels, because it is a censorship-free platform. It is also heavy on our voice. So if you're used to the way we speak, you recognize us in the writing as well. So please join our newsletter. We'd really appreciate it. Redacted.inc. It's free.
Plano Tennis says, Redacted has YouTube privilege. I don't think so at all. I mean, again, we know that there are two different categories of content that gets published on YouTube, right? The Fox News, CNNs of the world, and MSNBCs, NBC, CBS, they are literally, and we know this for a fact, that YouTube has favored nation status for those big media corporations. Independent media like us, even though we have almost 2 million subscribers, we have a warning right out now on our channel. We have a warning right now on our channel for content that we've done. So
we don't even have a person that we can talk to if anything does happen. Like we don't even, like, yeah, we've never talked to anybody at YouTube. Like they don't contact us. We can't contact them. So
if only we've asked for help.
But I will point out, our friends at Rumble have been amazing. So we are broadcasting live right now on Rumble.
I text them.
Yeah.
I text Rumble.
Like, yeah. That's how good those guys are. So anyway, we're on both platforms, and we use this platform because it's large. It's large. It gets us out to a lot of people. So again, we're here. We're here. Please just smash that like button. Push us further out of the algorithm.
I mean, just think what we could do if we had preferential treatment. But, you know, those subscribers that we have, we work for that. That is blood, sweat, and tears, because the algorithm, as Russell Brand says, is not your friend. Like that. Margaret Norvell, thank you for joining. Anyone else who joins will get their name on the board. Anyone else who subscribes. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Each one is heartfelt.
All right, let's get to your big, let's get to the news now. And let's talk about what's going on. So the United States is actively preparing for war with China and actively ready for war in Ukraine to totally fail. Team Biden is telling Team Zelensky, hey, you better launch that spring offensive that we've been hearing so much about. You're going to launch that spring offensive that's going to take back territory from Russia. You're going to take back Crimea. You're going to take back the eastern, what was eastern Ukraine, the Donbas region, which is now under Russian control. You better do it now, or we're walking away. That's essentially the message coming out of the Biden administration about Ukraine. Wow, what an about face. But at the same time, they are actively preparing for war against China, running all sorts of war games over the past 24 hours. We'll get to that, all of that, in a second. And the media is in lockstep, and the House of Representatives is in lockstep for war with China, or a provocation of a war with China. But today, President Biden has officially announced that he's running for president again today. He held a big speech in Washington, D.C., to announce he's running for re-election. Thousands of people showed up. There was tons of applause. We have video of President Biden's announcement today, running for president for 2024. Watch.
Today, it will come as no surprise to any of you, I'm announcing my candidacy for re-election to the United States Senate.
He looks so good.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong video. Wrong video. In fact, there was no speech at all today. There was no applause. There were no thousands of people. There was no re-election speech, then followed by, hey, I'm getting on an airplane and I'm going to go and start doing campaign events, which is historically what has always happened. He'll pop up in Ohio. He'll go to Iowa. He'll suddenly be popping up all over the place on message, with a message that they're going to carry around. None of that. None of that. Because the guy can't speak. The guy has dementia. The guy cannot put two sentences together. And so his campaign built an entire highly produced, polished, like, teaser trailer for the announcement of him running in 2024. I've never seen anything like this. Watch.
Freedom. Personal freedom is fundamental to who we are as Americans.
There's nothing more important, nothing more sacred.
That's been the work of my first term. to fight for our democracy.
This shouldn't be a red or blue issue.
To protect our rights, to make sure that everyone in this country is treated equally and that everyone is given a fair shot at making it. But you know, around the country, MAGA extremists are lining up to take on those bedrock freedoms, cutting Social Security that you've paid for your entire life while cutting taxes for the very wealthy, dictating what healthcare decisions women can make, banning books, and telling people who they can love, all while making it more difficult for you to be able to vote.
Lots of Kamala in this video, too. Kamala, comma, like every other shot's like Kamala.
When I ran for president 4 years ago, I said we're in a battle for the soul of America, and we still are. The question we're facing is whether in the years ahead we have more freedom or less freedom, more rights or fewer. I know what I want the answer to be, and I think you do, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's enough, because it goes on for like another minute and a half, and it's the same thing, like someone playing piano music, sad music, happy music.
I got really scared in the middle there when the music got all dark and mysterious.
And MAGA.
The MAGA extremists.
Yeah. I hid under my desk. I was very frightened. Very frightened.
So let's just analyze this for a second here, and then we'll move on and talk about China and talk about Ukraine, because there's a couple of things. Number one, no mention of inflation. Like, I'm going to ask you right now, maybe we can put up a poll here in the chat as you guys are watching live. Like, what is the number one issue for you guys right now at home watching? Is it food prices? Is it inflation? Is it that your paycheck doesn't go as far to pay your bills and to put food on your table? Arguably, that's probably going to be the number one issue for most of you, right? It is for our family. It is for most families. And so there's no mention of that. This video is totally aimed at the base, his Democratic base, which has been fractured at best anyway. A number of Democrats in recent polling say they do not want him to run. So what did he pick in this video? Abortion, right off the top. Abortion, abortion, and voting rights. Like, that's what he's running on. Voting rights.
And MAGA extremism. That he alone can combat MAGA extremism. When he's the one who sort of launched this as a platform. And even, let's for a second pretend that that is a major threat to the nation. What has he done then? What has he done so far, other than name it?
Can you name MAGA extremism? I don't know if you've driven down like the streets of San Francisco, if you see what is actually causing, drive down the streets of Chicago. Is it MAGA extremism that's causing all of the violence? I don't think so. So no mention of this was a total video towards the base of the party. And furthermore, they've also, it's odd launch time of this video as well. And this announcement, given this week, you have this big congressional debate over the debt ceiling. So a lot of focus, this news will sort of go out the window, and it's going to be a focus on, like, we're going to raise the debt ceiling once again. We're going to battle back, default on America's debts. What's going to do that to the U.S. dollar? Like, these are the big stories that are facing Washington right now. This is going to get lost in the mix.
And did you see, I don't know if you saw the link that I sent you, but the DNC says they're not going to participate in any debates in 2024.
Yeah. So the days of Joe Biden taking on Sarah Palin, which was much must-watch TV. I enjoyed that, right? Because Joe Biden at the time, was described as very wonky. He could hold his own. He could speak in complete sentences, and he could remember facts and figures pretty well. I just want to go back to this point that you just made about MAGA extremists. I lost it. David was saying something.
The biggest threat, talking about the biggest threats. I talk about Chicago and I talk about San Francisco and these open air drug markets and all of
this. Yes. So consider this for a second, because so many Republicans had become, we call them single issue voters over abortion. And now we see that the Democratic Party is sort of trying to recreate that through single issue voters through abortion on the flip side. It's almost like a negative image, right? Because so many Republicans, there were plenty of Republicans who weren't comfortable with Trump and his sort of lifestyle and the models and the multiple marriages and things like that, but they were single issue voters on abortion. Now Democrats think, those are useful types of voters. Can we harness that and just go all in on keeping abortion? And it does seem to be a useful political tactic.
It is, but just for the base. Because, again, 100 million Americans don't vote for either of these corrupt parties. So you're leaving all of these people out of the mix who aren't concerned about this at all. What they want is a safe country. What they want is a prosperous country. What they want is to be able to provide for their family, and they want security. I mean, at the end of the day, and you don't have that.
Yes, but there is a navel-gazing contingency of TikTokers who want to just vote in order to speak for women's rights. And they legitimately feel like they are speaking for women's rights through this vote, even though I can make the argument quite easily that women have lost many rights under the Biden administration, including the rights to sports and the rights to single-sex spaces. But these people feel like it is something they can do to speak up for abortion and free access to abortion. And so they will rile up beyond the base, I think. Beyond the base now is this, I want to say, like, let's call them altruistic women's right TikTokers. They feel
gone
like
are the days of the soccer mom as like the targeted demographic. Now it's fake altruistic TikTok moms.
Well, they believe they're being altruistic. And they're really riled up for their daughters and abortion's rights. And the algorithm yeah. feeds them things about like hands off my uterus type yeah. stuff. I think that it's bigger than all that. And I think that that's why this is so strategically placed, these ads.
So that's the, you know, that's the big announcement. Again, I just wanted to sort of look at the optics of this, right? He doesn't give a speech. He doesn't launch like a big campaign event tour where he's landing and talking, because he can't string sentences together. And this is who the Democrats are putting up. And I will say, you know, you've got Robert F. Kennedy Jr. running. You've got Marianne Williamson, who are now going to primary against him. That will be interesting to watch. But oh boy, I mean, the deep state absolutely wants Joe Biden to be the president of the United States. The deep state, the deep military industrial complex, it's very, very, very difficult to beat that. Right. So, guys, this is an opportunity. You know, I don't know who you plan to vote for, what you're thinking in your brain, but we've all got to make a point of getting a message out and stopping this type of nonstop warmongering presidents of the United States, this continued warmongering. So I was looking today. We are actively in 9 different wars right now. President Biden is a warmonger, and he's literally and arguably a war criminal. Right. So in charge of 9 wars. No mention of that. No mention at all of that. I'm battling for the soul of America. Here's an idea. Get out of all of these countries. The only person we featured on the show who last week, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced for president, said he's going to close all the military bases around the world and bring the troops home. I was like, what? Did I just hear that?
Yeah.
So the military industrial complex does not want that. They're going to do everything they can in their power to make sure that Robert F. Kennedy doesn't get in there.
And he's given more money to Ukraine than he's done any, like, how much has the United States got? Like, anything for infrastructure, anything, like, Ukraine has gotten more.
Yeah.
And that's on top of the war budet.
Yeah, $118 billion is what we know about, right? But it's way higher than that. So this morning, we learned that the United States, speaking of wars and where we're going, the United States ran through its biggest war exercises yet in preparation for war with China. So all of this is coming together, guys. Like, President Biden's launching his reelection campaign, and we are ramping up for war. These things work in lockstep, in tandem, right? And this happened a few hours ago in the Philippines. On South Island, south of Taiwan, U.S. prepares for conflict with China. Hundreds of U.S. Marines, U.S. Army soldiers participated in military exercises on the Philippine island of Bataan, just over 100 miles across the Bashi Channel from Taiwan. The drills are part of the Balikatan exercise, which is being touted as the largest ever joint military exercise between the United States and the Philippines. And of course, they come after the U.S. inked a deal expanding its military presence in the Southeast Asian nation. Of course, additional military bases that the Biden administration has just managed to do. All of this, of course, is part of Washington's plan for a future conflict with China. So massive amounts of soldiers participating in these military exercises, jets, aircraft, HIMARS, they even brought HIMARS to be able to hit Chinese targets hundreds of miles away. That was part of these drills, all of it as part of a gear up for this war. And they're all throwing around this number of 2027. Like, we're going to go to war by 2027. Like, they're all saying this now. Like, this is the target date for war with China.
Is this like the next pandemic? Like, they've got it planned to the year? That's
it's like they've got it written down.
Thinking there.
I mean, and because look at this. Back in Washington, the House of Representatives launched a China war games. This is what the House of Representatives is doing while President Biden is actively pushing for war against China, using their own board games. Look at this. This is how they were even using little toys and little cards and on the floor of the House of Representatives planning for war with China. And by the way, they say 2027. Watch this. This is ABC News covering this. Watch.
At how members on the House China Committee are gaming out war scenarios. In the sky, on the sea, China staging combat exercises, a show of force, a warning that a potential blockade of Taiwan could be coming. The Chinese Army even releasing this simulation of how they'd attack the nearby island, a self-governed democracy that China claims as its own territory. But on Capitol Hill this week, lawmakers staged their own simulation.
Tonight is not about a desire for war.
Oh, sure.
It's certainly not about playing frivolous games.
Oh,
it's
sure.
It's about prevent war games.
China Committee Chairman Mike Gallagher and ranking member Raja Krishnamurthy set up the exercise with the Center for New American Security.
This game is going to be a Chinese invasion of Taiwan set in 2027.
What exactly do we know
game,
right now
she says.
About their mobilization effort?
Members from both sides of the aisle coming together, politics set aside. There's Virginia Republican Robert Whitman and Massachusetts.
They're coming together over war. If there's one thing they all can get together on, it's that they hate China. They want a war with China.
Democrat Jake Auchincloss, the members taking on the role of advisors to the president.
What if we communicated to expats and students from China right now?
This is part of what you get to decide.
That's Stacey Pettijohn, a senior fellow from CNAS, acting as the game master.
You know, like if I play Dungeons and Dragons with my kids, it's a lot different than this.
Well, I was just going to say, in Hunger Games, the game master dies.
This is like her job. Here's what
I
do.
I didn't give anything away there.
Mommy, what do you do? Well, here's what I do. I actively plan wars with foreign countries, and then I bring it to Congress, and I sit down on the floor of the House of Representatives, and I set up board games, and I invite all the members of Congress, and I invite ABC News to come in with their film cameras and film the whole thing and put it out on the night. It's total propaganda. That's what I do to my kids. Oh, mommy, that's really great. That's what they're doing. These are war games that they're doing, literally planning for war with China by 2027. Mapped out with, like, they're playing Risk or Stratego, by
with
the way.
People's lives. And, you know, when they say 2027, my first thought goes to, oh, my son will be 17. Like, he's getting close to draft age. These are the things that like, scare me. And they're playing as if these are his peers. These are, you know, kids and their lives, and they're just making them game pieces.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So they say war is coming in 2027. This is what the war games show. Where have I heard this before, though? Oh, right. NBC News also put together their own war games a few months ago with China on a whole segment planning. And guess what? Planning for war in 2027. This is all about connecting the dots, guys. Like, what are we not being told? So NBC News, Meet the Press, does this whole war games planning session on the floor of the House of Representatives. They're doing a whole war games planning session, 2027, mapping it out with members of Congress. This is all part of a plan. Watch this Meet the Press segment.
Operations. And we wanted to know more about these war games. What do they look like? How do they unfold? What would it take to win, especially in this moment we're in and what's happening in Ukraine? So to find out, we worked with the gaming lab at the Center for a New American Security, CNAS. This is a think tank that specializes in national security. CNAS convened two teams to fight it out here in our Washington studio. The blue team, a group of defense experts, members of Congress, and a retired Air Force general who played the role of American defense officials on the National Security Council advising the United States.
And then the scary red team?
And the red team.
Oh,
China,
there they are.
Experts. And the CEO of CNAS played the part of China's Central Military Commission, advising President Xi.
Yeah, they look like trouble. All red.
CIS drafted the terms of the hypothetical conflict, set 5 years from now in 2027.
Oh.
With China poised to launch a direct attack on Taiwan to force unification after Taiwan had elected new leadership, increasingly defying Chinese pressure.
All right. So 2027, guys, get ready. All signs pointing to that. So this is all very eerily timed that this comes together right as President Biden is announcing he's running for re-election. Enemy number one is China. Who's out? Russia. Zelensky. They're out. New reports out today showing President Biden pressuring the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, to launch a spring offensive now or start to negotiate a surrender. This, according to Politico, Biden's team fears the aftermath of a failed Ukrainian counteroffensive. The Biden administration is quietly preparing for the possibility that if Ukraine's spring counteroffensive falls short of expectations, critics at home and allies abroad will argue that America has come up short. Time to get out. Time to leave. We are done. Zelensky is finished. We're turning the page and just focusing on China now. That is the message.
And it would seem that the president thought that Ukraine would give his presidency a quick boost, that it might be sort of a quick offensive. They could push Russia out with lots of support, military support, and that he could campaign on his support for Ukraine. That almost never works when you sort of think of a foreign war as a boost for your presidential election. Now, as today I was watching online, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were retweeting Joe Biden's campaign relaunching video and talking about how they thought he was so great. Well, I just would like to remind you what happened when candidate for president Hillary Clinton thought that she could have a nice little war under her belt that would give her a boost to the presidency. In 2011, Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, felt that the Arab Spring put sort of egg in the face of the U.S. by rising up against a U.S.-sponsored president. So they decided they could make a better example of Libya by ousting Muammar Gaddafi. They started providing weapons to groups that wanted to overthrow the government, which were incidentally extremists. They were Islamic extremists, but the Obama administration made up this term moderate rebels to disguise the fact that the U.S. was, in fact, arming radical Islam. And here is how and why Obama and Clinton launched that war with the 2016 presidential election in mind. I like this summary from the book Already Enough Already by Scott Horton, so I'm going to read you this little bit. He says, reportedly, as they debated it in the White House, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Staff Admiral Mike Mullen, and National Security Advisor Tom Donilon and his deputy, all of these people, plus Joe Biden, argued they shouldn't start the war. So Joe Biden at the time was against the war in Libya. Robert Gates later came to have claimed to have repeatedly asked, can't I just finish the two wars we're already in before we go looking for a third? But he must have miscounted. It was four going on five at the time, counting Somalia and Pakistan. But this opposition by Gates and the others should have been all the cover Obama needed to back out. But Power, Rice, and Clinton talked him into launching it anyway. Perhaps Obama felt he owed Clinton a favor. You owe a favor, as in,
well, bomb a country.
I'm gonna bomb a country, take down a country for
you. Hey, Barack, I'm wondering if you could, I need a little favor. I'm running for president, and I'm wondering if you could just start a war on my behalf. This is what a phone looks
start
like.
Start a war and let me be the face of it. And mm-hmm. then, I mean, she tried. She did many victory laps over the collapse of Gaddafi. And he thought, like, okay, you know, we campaigned hard against each other. You lost. I'm going to give you this one. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go into Libya for you. I'm going to ruin their lives. That's what I'm going
to
do.
What a favor to call in.
What a guy.
Yeah. Tell Barack.
Okay, let's get back to this. So he felt like he owed it to her. He had surely promised her he would support her run for president in 2016. As was evidenced then and confirmed later, Clinton and her team believed she would be able to run on the short and successful Libyan war in that presidential election. As her unofficial advisors had said to her, we see this later in emails released to the State Department. The fact that Clinton had just lost the presidential primary to Obama, mainly due to her hawkishness on Iraq, had apparently failed to make an impression on her. But because the war in Libya was such shit, By the time 2016 election came around, the Clinton campaign did not dare bring up Libya as any kind of victory. By then, clearly they hoped everyone would just forget about it. So this is the playbook, right? And here is how then Obama went on to go all in, like, yeah, you're my bud, I'm going to give you this country. And how he launched the war in Libya without congressional approval. Says not only did Obama refuse to consult Congress for authorization, he was not even in the country when he ordered the attack, which the Pentagon called Operation Odyssey Dawn. Instead, the president gave a speech from Brazil, where he was traveling on unrelated business. And in the speech, Obama falsely claimed that Gaddafi had vowed to murder every civilian in the eastern Libyan city of Benghazi, and that his forces were already on their way to do the job if the U.S. did not stop them. He claimed there were 700,000 men, women, and children under threat of imminent extermination, and asked Americans to imagine the city of Charlotte, North Carolina, being completely wiped out. The administration also claimed that Gaddafi was bombing peaceful protests and spread the ridiculous propaganda that Gaddafi had given all of his soldiers Viagra so that they could grape without a G every woman and girl they found on the rampage to the east. These were all lies, but they were good enough, and the bombs came raining down. So I present this to you because at the time, in its recent history, Gaddafi knew the United States had turned on him. He knew that they were gunning for him for a political victory, and he offered repeated peace talks. And the president and his cabinet ignored it, and so did the media. And so we can see the parallels to Ukraine so clearly here, right? That there was a politician that thought it would be good for him, dragged along a lot of lives for this, and now is sort of not wanting it anymore when presidential campaign time comes around.
Unbelievable. So we'll see. I mean, this is the playbook right now. Hunter Biden also apparently reportedly hiding out in the White House, avoiding like child care payments and trying to avoid investigation because that could be coming down imminently. So they're trying to like keep him shielded in the White House while they announce for re-election.
I'm just so curious, though, like I'm still kind of hung up on this 2027 thing. Like, what is the significance of that? Like, what's going to, like, I'm trying to think ahead of, like, what I know in the future could be happening in 2027 that they would want to coincide a war with China.
I mean, well, it's like, I think that
it just gives them enough breathing room to carry it out, right? I mean, to turn the page on what they've got going on in Russia, you know, and to really make China the evil empire, right? Because, again, as the U.S. dollar continues to decline, they're building up, it's like shaking up a soda bottle, right? They're like, they're building up all the pressure right now. They're trying to lay the foundation for the U.S. dollar decline and focusing and really trying to paint China as the enemy. So I think that gives them enough breathing room. I don't know if there's something more nefarious about that date, but boy, they're all on top of this 2027 date.
I think that they reverse engineer the propaganda that they can get across in a certain time. If they could do it faster, they probably would. But I have seen from people I know that work from the government that they have sort of milestones of communication type, like public relations campaigns. Like, can we get these countries to believe this? Or to, you
by
know,
this date.
Right. And they think it will take a certain amount of time. I think they probably think they can drum up enough anti-China sentiment, scare people enough about human rights campaigns and the Uyghurs and, you know, digital dollars and COVIDism and all of that stuff, that by the time 2027 goes around, if all goes to plan, we'll be all in to sending our kids to this type of war.
Let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below. Please smash that like button and subscribe. You know, our analytics show that over 70% of you watch the show and aren't subscribed to the channel. Isn't that crazy? So just subscribe to the channel. Hit that subscribe button. Turn a little bell notification on both Rumble and YouTube so that you'll get alerts about that. Coming up, we're going to talk about Justin Trudeau gaslighting all of us, trying to rewrite history, telling us that he never told anyone to go get vaccines. What? Like, he thinks... I mean, he thinks people are stupid, but we are not going to allow him to get away with it. We are going to do a deep dive on what Justin Trudeau just said, which is head scratcher of a moment. Why is Israel fighting? Why are Israelis fighting in Ukraine and dying? And why is no one reporting the story? We'll talk about that. And we're also going to look at a new study on masks. What in the world is the sort of maybe final thought on how bad masking could actually be for our health and our brain and our cognitive function? We're going to look at all of that and more. But first...
First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Stamps.com.
All right. If you want to go to Stamps.com right now, if you go to Stamps.com, you get a 4-week free trial. Use the promo code REDACTED. No more waiting to go to the post office, waiting in line at the post office to mail your packages and to do all of that stuff that takes forever. You can do it all right from your house. You can print postage right on your home printer. You can put it right on the box. You can, and what's great is when you sign up right now, you get a 4-week free trial and you go and use that promo code REDACTED. Click at the top, you get a free digital scale so you can measure everything right from home. There's nothing worse than waiting in line at the post office, right? I mean, sitting there waiting in line. Look at that. Who wants to stand there and do all that? Oh my gosh, it's absolute misery. I can think of maybe that and the DMV as like the two worst places to go to stand in line and wait there. So if you go to stamps.com and you use that promo code REDACTED, you're going to get a 4-week trial right now, and you're going to get a free digital scale. You can, and actually the rates for shipping on UPS and USPS postal rates are way cheaper than if you go and do it yourself. Like if you want to use UPS or use the postal service by going there physically, you're actually going to pay more to go there. So you actually save a boatload in postage rates by doing it from your house. All right. Am I right? Yes, I am right.
You're right.
Go to stamps.com and use that promo code REDACTED. Get a 4-week free trial plus a digital scale so you can do it all right from your house. No need to print and go to the post office and deal with all of that. All right, let's talk about our favorite dictator up north in Canada, Justin Trudeau, who is, I think, trying to rewrite history. And he's right now actively trying to gaslight all of us about what his role was in COVID, about vaccines, tyranny, lockdowns, the whole nine yards.
Well, he's pretending that he has always been super empathetic about people who had vaccine hesitancy, that he was easy on those people. He had an understanding about it. This comes from a discussion last week with German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier. We're going to play it, and we may have to stop him because we just can't stand it to hear these lies.
He's a weasel.
And then we're going to show you, we're just going to rewind the tape and let him contradict his self. So let's let him speak if you can take it.
Misinformation and disinformation is carrying people to believe things that are untrue. And vaccinations is a perfect example of it. Like any modern bit of medical advancements, there are potential side effects in vaccinations.
Oh, thanks for telling us now. Really?
You know, are people who've probably gotten very sick from vaccinations.
Oh.
Billions of people who've been vaccinated against COVID over the past few years.
Hmm.
There are far more people who obviously have died due to COVID.
His body language is so like... It's very...
It's condescending.
Yeah.
And the idea...
Like, so some people...
Yeah, so some people got sick.
Really sick.
These losers who got sick, but yeah. You know what?
People can fly in the face of science. Well, individuals are allowed to make their own choices. There may be all sorts of different...
Are they?
Is ...hesitant to get vaccinated. But I make a distinction, and I have always have.
Yeah.
Between someone choosing for personal reasons to choose not to get vaccinated and someone deliberately using misinformation to mislead and scare other people with so-called facts that aren't facts at all.
What the hell are you talking about?
I don't know. So he's trying to draw these two distinctions between someone who doesn't want to get vaccinated for personal reasons. That personal reason could be because you read.
Yeah, you're educated.
And someone who uses misinformation not to get vaccinated. Now, that means that someone who uses misinformation is someone who uses information that the government doesn't like. That's really the only way to parse out these two groups of people. So these two unvaccinated groups, one group has personal reasons and the other group has things that they read that they find data points that the government doesn't like. That's the only way I can distinguish.
So how is that any different than personal reasons? Right?
Well, because you got to show your work. It's like math class. You got to show your work. You may have got to the right answer, but you didn't do it the right way.
So if the little old grandma over there is like, no, I just don't want to do it because I don't want to do it. He's fine with that. But if the other person over there, the other little old grandma is like, I don't want to do it because you know what? I've been watching the show Redacted and I've been learning and I've been seeing what this could do to my body. And so I don't want to do that. That's who he has a problem with.
I suppose that's a tale of two grannies.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find like sweet old grandmas as an example. And he's deciding that because someone has information that the government doesn't like, that's a person that falls in this other second bucket.
I suppose. And he's pretending that he was so empathetic and kind and gentle on these personal reasons groups. I never saw anything like that. I never saw any kindness to any distinction between anti people who did not want, or refused to use the word anti-vaxxer. I hate it.
Well, I mean, they were very gentle. They were very gentle when they seized those truckers' bank accounts and their PayPals. And like they were very gentle about it. They were very nice. Like, I'm sorry. I have to take your money.
It's personal. I have to. It's not personal, actually, they said.
Yeah. So it's not a personal decision, I guess.
That lead them to make a choice that endangers their lives and the lives of other citizens.
Yeah,
so as Prime Minister, through the greatest public health crisis that we've faced in 100 years in this country, since the Spanish flu, my responsibility was to keep as many Canadians alive as possible. And all of the scientists and the medical experts and the researchers, not just in Canada, but around the world, understood that vaccination was going to be the way through this.
Except for the ones that you didn't allow to speak, who completely contradicted your experts, all of the medical experts who were allowed to testify before Congress, but then were banned and blocked on social media and deplatformed. What about those people? Or your World Economic Forum approved medical experts, your Klaus Schwab approved medical experts that were allowed to speak in Canada and not silenced. Those people?
And therefore, while not forcing anyone to get vaccinated,
not forcing anyone, he says,
sure that all the incentives and all the protections were there to encourage Canadians to get vaccinated.
He never asked anyone, never forced anyone to get vaccinated.
That's, I mean, he literally said, you will not travel this year to see any family members or for business if you're not vaccinated, except under some extreme exemptions.
Yeah.
He literally said, you're not going anywhere unless you have. So, okay, not forcing, right? But he certainly made life uncomfortable if you didn't want to.
I mean,
maybe he doesn't know the meaning of the word encouraged. Like, you keep using that word, but yeah. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Right.
Does he go on?
A little bit longer.
And that's exactly what they did. We got vaccinated to a higher level than just about any other of our peer countries. And that's why we had a less deadly pandemic than most other countries.
Now, here he's pretending how understanding he was about people who didn't want to get vaccinated for personal reasons. He never made that distinction during the heart of the pandemic. Here is a quote from 2021. This is December of 2021. And he went on a French TV show, Western Standard. And so because I don't speak French, I'm going to show you the transcript of it. He says, we all know people who are deciding whether or not they are willing to get vaccinated, and we will do our very best to try to convince them. However, there is still a part of the population that is fiercely against it. Now, this, keep in mind, he's talking about a part of the population that doesn't want to get vaccinated. They don't believe in science progress. They are often very misogynistic and racist. So he here is saying that people who don't want to get vaccinated are often misogynist and racist. He says, this leads us as a leader and as a country to make a choice. Do we tolerate these people? So he's saying he was super sensitive about it. Here he's asking himself if he should even tolerate their existence. He says over 80% of the population in Quebec have done their duty by getting the shot. They are obviously not the issue in this situation. So I don't think this is the language of someone who was sensitive to people who didn't want to get vaccinations for personal reasons. He also said at the time of the trucker convoy that Canadians who protested vaccine mandates held unacceptable views, and he called them fringe minority. Watch this.
Canadians have stepped up to do the right thing to protect the freedoms and the rights of Canadians to get back to the things we love to do. We know the way through this pandemic is by getting everyone vaccinated. And the overwhelming majority, close to 90% of Canadians, have done exactly that. The small fringe minority of people who are on their way to Ottawa or who are holding unacceptable views that they're expressing.
They're holding unacceptable views.
Do not represent the views of Canadians who have been there for each other, who know that following the science and stepping up to protect each other is the best way to continue to ensure our freedoms, our rights, our values as a country.
Yeah, you communist. So these opinions that we don't agree with, these opinions that are unseemly.
Right.
The fringe minority. You guys are on the fringe.
Well, he was so, you know, you're not following the science. But now when the Canadian government has been pushed about what science they use to instate certain mandates and travel lockdowns, they have not been able to show that they had science guiding those decisions in the first place. And in fact, if we could just skip forward to the last video, I want to show you this that he put forward, and we have never seen science on this. Here is Trudeau telling five-year-olds that once they have their five-year birthday, they can have some cake and they can have a vaccine. And I'm wondering where he got that science while he was being so sensitive to people who may not have had the vaccine. Watch this.
You're going to be able to get your vaccine as soon as you turn five. And I know you're excited and I know you're eager. In some places across the country, you can even start making your appointment now for shortly after your birthday.
Oh my God, that makes me sick to my stomach.
Yeah, hey, like, little four-year-old.
Hey guys, here's the Prime Minister on a Zoom call here in this classroom. And I know you guys are super excited about getting your vaccines. Like little five-year-olds are like, what? No, I want to.
I don't want to get a shot.
No. I play with Play-Doh.
My six-year-old got one of those finger prick tests last week just for a blood test and freaked out as if it were a scandal. There is nothing that any celebrity could say to get her excited about any vaccine, even if it were Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
That wouldn't, Eve would not
hey,
be very
Eve,
excited about that.
Like he's there like a clown, like at your kid's birthday party. Yes, we're gonna do some juggling here, guys. We're gonna do some balloon animals and you're gonna get your vaccine. Kids will like be like, what well, the hell? Get me out of here. No.
creating division. With kids, we know kids tease each other about things like, anyway, I got my vaccination and you didn't. Like, you
yeah,
know what I mean? It's like,
right.
I don't know. If my daughter saw this video and be like, hey, Eve, guess who's on, you know, this Zoom call, you know, to convince you to get your COVID vaccine. And then, like, I put her on, like, here, it's Justin Trudeau. This is what she did with class at home a lot. She was like, nope.
Yeah,
she would walk away.
She's like, no way, I'm not doing that. Yeah, hey, Barack Obama is doing a Zoom, a FaceTime call, Eve. Barack Obama wants to talk to you. And who's, all right, okay. Barack Obama, the president of the United States. Hi, Eve, it's Mr. President, President Obama. You are very lucky, you just turned five. You get to go and get your very first shot. She would go, mommy, and she would throw the phone down. No kid is excited at that. It's propaganda.
They jabbed Elmo and Big Bird.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were paid to do that. I mean, you know, it's like it made the U.S. taxpayers foot the bill for Sesame Street to do COVID propaganda. unbelievable. This weasel. So we will hold him accountable. He's trying to gaslight and rewrite history as to what his involvement was, of course, in pushing vaccines and telling us all. And then, of course, calling you racist or misogynist if you didn't want to get it done. We've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about this new mask story. Holy smokes. Wait until you hear this, guys. You're going to want to share this segment. Share this with your family. We're just going to take a little short little break here, but you're going to want to share this story. And we're also going to be covering why are Israelis fighting and dying inside of Ukraine right now. No coverage at all on this story. We're going to dive deep into that. First of all, we want to tell you that anyone can find anything on the internet these days, right? Including your full legal name, your personal email, your home address, your phone number, all of that, all of your relatives. Just try it for like one of your relatives, like you, maybe your sister-in-law, your whatever. Look it up. Look it up and you will be stunned at what you find about personal info that's out there. It's unbelievable. This information is accessible because of data brokers who profit by selling your information to robocallers, telemarketers. And that's why I want to tell you about our sponsor for today's video, our friends over at Aura, because Aura will identify data brokers that are exposing your information and automatically submit opt-out requests. That's right. They will handle all of this stuff for you. They'll even opt you out of junk mail and telemarketing lists, which is amazing. And when you sign up, just try it. You can sign up and try it, and you'll be stunned at how much of your information has been sold on the black market. It is stunning. When I signed up for the first time and I was getting alerts about, I'm like, wait a minute, why do they have this old phone number? Or why do they have this credit card information? How do they have this on the dark web? It's there. You'll be stunned about it. And then Aura can go through and get rid of it. So right there, there's a QR code that's right there on your screen. You can use the QR code to try for 14 days for free and protect yourself from America's fastest growing crime, which of course is cybercrime. Aura's app also features a VPN, has a password manager, real-time credit and identity theft monitoring, internet parental controls, protects your devices from malware. Aura has almost every internet safety tool you'll ever need, all inside of one app. So let Aura do all of the hard work of keeping you safe online. If you sign up right now, Aura will give you 2-week free trial with our link. If you go to aura.com/redacted, or you just use the QR code on your screen and try it, you'll be shocked at how much of your private information Aura finds exposed over those 2 weeks when you're trying it. I'm shocked. I was shocked. You will be shocked. Visit our sponsor, Aura, to start your free trial right now. Aura.com/redacted is the place to go. All right. So thank you guys so much for subscribing to the channel. When you subscribe, your name pops up here on the big screen right behind, right over Natalie's shoulder right there. So in that seat, boom, Feel Alive Coaching just subscribed as a new rebel. Welcome to the rebellion. Welcome to the rebellion. Feel Alive Coaching is the screen name. So thank you guys. Again, when you subscribe, your name will pop up here on the big screen. So please, please subscribe to the channel and help support independent media. It really, really helps us. And by the way, while you're watching live, if you would be so kind as to hit that like button, it actually pushes us further out into the YouTube algorithm. It also helps on Rumble as well, to when you smash that plus button on Rumble, to push us out into the algorithm as well.
All right, we're going to talk now about masking and whether or not it prevents transmission of any virus, and whether or not there may be unintended harms, because some of us have not forgotten that mask mandates were a major component of human society for a long time, and maybe that was not a good thing.
It was awful. It was terrible. Let's be honest. It was the worst thing ever.
All right, I'm going to give you studies. Stop and wait for the science before you... Okay.
I am science.
You're not science. I'm going to give you the science on masking. Now, most of us, we sort of remember what it felt like to, you know, shame other people for masking or shame other people for not masking or observe that happening and sort of like posts about it and get yourself all riled up. It became very political. And establishment politicians were very much for it. Why? Though at the time, we had Fauci sort of flip-flopping about it, but what was the science around it? Now, here is one of the most comprehensive studies about it that was just out this week, and it comes out of Germany from, these are the researchers there, and it's called Possible Toxicity of Chronic Carbon Dioxide Exposure Associated with Face Mask Use, particularly in pregnant women, children, and adolescents. So it's not a brand new clinical trial. It is a literature review. They collected all of the literature on these, on masking and carbon dioxide exposure for a very long time, and they collated it to see what did we know, when did we know it, and why did we think this about masks. What they are saying is that they can make a connection between carbon dioxide exposure, which is cause, which does happen when someone wears a mask, and undesirable things such as testicular dysfunction,
what?
Stillbirths, reduced motor and verbal skills for children, and overall cognitive decline for children born during the pandemic. Now, they're not saying the masks cause these things. They're saying that something happens while wearing a mask, which increases your exposure to CO2, and that prolonged exposure to CO2 has known side effects. Now, I saw a lot of people saying that during the pandemic and being sort of pooped on, for lack of a better word, by people and calling them anti-maskers. This is, again, I'm, you know, in hindsight, we can really see the words that were used to throw away critical thought, such as anti-vax, anti-mask. I will never use those words again. And you can see now why people who were saying things that science actually knew at the time were just tossed aside. They were jettisoned. Now, the authors are trying in this research review to answer two questions. One, do masks actually prevent transmission? And two, do masks cause unintentional harm that maybe society has ignored? Most of this is not new. Researchers have known this all along, but were not, in fact, allowed to question it. In fact, recall that Dr. Fauci, at the start of the pandemic, said that masks were not necessary. And then now recently, when he retired from his post, he says he wished he had never said that. Watch.
Would you take back what you said about masks? Obviously, the guidance changed, but you were, but you were very definitive. You said there's absolutely no reason for people to be wearing masks.
Yeah, I mean, sure, if I had to do it over again, of course, I would have analyzed it a little bit better.
Oh.
Yeah. If he had had it all to do over again, he would have. Now, he, no, notice he says, is that the whole clip? Do we play that all the way through?
That was it. Yep. That was
oh, okay. Maybe it got. So what he says later, he says, you know, but then the guidance changed. Now, note that word. He's, it's not the science that changed. The guidance changed, meaning people in power changed what they said, but the science didn't change. It was there all along. And here is what the science says, according to this German study, that no comparable standard testing of masks for viruses has been established. In an important human subject evaluation with NaCl aerosol representing bacterial and viral particle size range, the general filtration efficacy of surgical and N95 masks for bigger bacteria-sized particles was better. But interestingly, most of the tested N95 respirators and surgical masks performed at their worst against particles approximately between this 0.04 and 0.02 size, which includes the sizes of COVID and influenza. Indeed, some modeling and in vitro laboratory simulation studies aim to demonstrate less virus transmissions when masks are used. So we never had a conclusive study showing that masks could block out COVID and the size of that virus. Why weren't we discussing this louder during the pandemic when masking requirements were in place? And just to remind
you, many of us were. You know, and sure. As someone in the chat just said, whoever just said this in the chat said, I was always suspicious of the fact that the masks couldn't stop a fart, but yet we could think that it would stop COVID.
Did you great, smell fart through mask?
Great point. Great point. I agree with that sentiment.
How strong are your farts? I don't think I ever smelled fart through a mask.
Rewind the clock. Rewind the clock.
Do you want to do experiments later tonight?
Put on a mask right now. We don't need
put on a mask right now. You said taco. It's taco night.
That's what we're going to be up to. We'll let you know.
That's why I love our chat room. The smartest people in the world. Thank you for that.
Okay.
Yeah, gave tomorrow great... Natalie's going to be like, yeah, he was right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. My hair will be all flat.
Yeah.
That was awful. Okay. I just want to remind you how far and wide these legislations reached. The authors point out that 77% of the countries in the world introduced a requirement to wear masks in public spaces to contain COVID-19 in 2020. Simultaneously, it was one of the most important ubiquitous environmental factors directly affecting human breathing. That's a big statement, right? In a world where we have pollution from all manner of things, they are saying it was one of the most important factors affecting human breathing.
Someone in our chat, David in our chat just said, I'm pro-breathing. Like, is that funny? Yeah. I'm for that too. Like, we were literally almost like asphyxiating millions of people with these mask
protocols. Well, we're going to show you when we get to this data. Now, government data from the end of the year 2021 showed an estimated almost 4.4 billion people worldwide, 58% of the world's population, had been confronted with mask obligations. Now, on YouTube through 2021, there has been a ban against what they call misinformation, including, this is a quote from YouTube's terms of service, claims that masks do not play a role in preventing the contraction or transmission of COVID-19. Where did they get that science? Not sure, but they were comfortable, in fact, removing a video from Senator Rand Paul, who had also a suspension on his channel because he did a video asking about the efficacy of masks. Many channels had videos taken down. Now, right now, YouTube no longer has any guidance about saying whether or not masks work or not. But they do say that we cannot discuss things that contradict the World Health Organization, which we are not doing right now, because the World Health Organization right now in January of 2023, they updated their guidelines, and this is their guidelines as it states right now, is that on wearing a mask for COVID-19, it says wearing a mask. Now, I highlighted these three words, may, because may does not mean they have a scientific conclusion. So they're leaving it open to interpretation. Why should people wear masks? Wearing a mask reduces the spread of respiratory illness within the community by reducing the number of infectious particles that may be inhaled or exhaled. These particles may be spread when an infected individual talks, sings, shouts, coughs, or sneezes. Not farts, Clayton. And masks may provide protection to the wearer and those around them. So that is what the World Health Organization is saying. They are not saying absolutely that masks are definitive COVID prevention any longer. They're not saying that. And we are not, so then by discussing this, we are not contradicting the World Health Organization. But I do want to know about this word may, because after 3 years and millions of people wearing masks, they are now admitting that basically they don't have science behind it.
Yeah. What was the science behind having kids in band class putting, like, holding a saxophone where they would have a mask on and puncture a hole in the mask so that they could play the saxophone through the mask? Remember that crap?
No.
Remember the kids playing the flute? We've showed videos of these kids. I mean, it was awful. I mean,
yeah, they had like cut out.
Yeah, they like cut out holes and they were like playing. They were like, it was ridiculous. Like, what's the science behind that crap?
That is stupid.
They had things over the end of the saxophone so that when you like blow through the saxophone through your mask hole, that your saxophone would then capture whatever respiratory droplets are being fired out of your saxophone hole.
What gets me is when I have to wear it into the dentist office and then I take it off and I open my mouth full, you know, like, so oh, I'm glad
stupid.
I was
I'm glad
wearing
they stopped that stupid
a mask from the door to this chair.
So stupid. You know what? I would love to see a study on all of those people that work in a hospital that wear them all day, you know?
Right. Yeah. Which many of them have only just been reprieved from. Now, when Rand Paul was suspended for this, the New York Times pointed to this article that they wrote in which they declaratively said that masks work. They don't cite a single scientific study in this article. They just took it upon themselves to declare the debate, quote, settled. I circled that word because I find it so, like, that is really bad faith journalism. It's actually total shit journalism. It's not
settled.
Even an opinion
The debate
piece.
Is settled. Don't even question it.
It's just junk partisan writing. And so then now on to the question of whether or not masks may have caused harm due to prolonged exposure. Here is from this study. It said that fresh air has fresh air has around 0.04% CO2, while wearing masks more than 5 minutes bears a possible chronic exposure to carbon dioxide of 1.41 to 3.2% of the inhaled air. Although the buildup is usually within the short-term exposure limits, long-term exceedances and consequences must be considered due to experimental data. And then it goes on to talk about how even the U.S. Navy sets toxicity levels for CO2 exposure at 0.8, and masks are more than double that if you wear them for even 5 minutes. And here is what the study says about carbon dioxide exposure. It says that humans exhale about 2.3 pounds of CO2 on average per day. We are not supposed to, sorry, that's not from this study. This is just me saying that based on research. We're not supposed to breathe that back in. When your respiratory system is working properly, this is what your body does with CO2. This is from a great book I read after my daughter had pneumonia called Asthma Free Naturally. It says carbon dioxide is produced as an end product of the process of breaking down the fats and carbohydrates that you eat. And this gas is brought by your venous blood vessels to your lungs, where the excess is exhaled. So you're not supposed to keep it. Crucially, part of your body's quotient of carbon dioxide is retained when you exhale, and correct breathing results in the required amounts of carbon dioxide being retained in your lungs. So you see, it is a delicate balance that your body is always working to maintain. The German study showed that there is possible toxicity when you are constantly exposed to high levels of carbon dioxide. And so wearing a mask, again, doubles the acceptable levels. And this constant exposure, then they say, has known risks in laboratory animals. So what they say is that they know that lab animals exposed to high levels of CO2 have these things, testicular dysfunction, stillbirths, memory loss, verbal skill reduction, all of that kind of stuff. And here are some of the known side effects that they had already known from previous studies about this. It says there's a high risk. These are things that they had already known, that masks bear several side effects and risk. There's a high risk of improper handling when the mask is used by the general population and by children. Yes, you saw people who wore it on their sleeves, who would like put be in a restaurant elbow, and then wad it up and put it on their elbow as they're walking around. That can't be good. A lack of correlation, they say, between school mask mandates and pediatric COVID-19 cases could recently be shown in a vast study which replicated the CDC study and extended it to more districts for a longer period, employing 7 times as much data. And what they say is that they didn't find a relationship between mask mandates and pediatric cases. And then on the bottom, I want to highlight this, that data on this 25,000 children wearing face masks for 270 minutes per day showed that 68% complained about discomfort. They had side effects, including irritability, headache, difficulty concentrating, less happiness, reluctance to go to school and kindergarten, malaise, impaired learning, and drowsiness and fatigue. In another study, they led to breathing problems in 100 school children between 8 and 11 years of age, especially during physical exertion. And despite having the lowest risk of severe disease from COVID infection, children endure the most disproportionate disruption to their lives in the most formative years during the pandemic. That we all know absolutely is true. Now, additionally, studies of guinea pigs with elevated CO2 levels did show stillbirths and birth defects. Rats with elevated CO2 levels had learning and memory disorders and testicular disorders. This is obviously very anxietizing research, especially if you lived in an area with mask mandates. Our children had to wear them to school, our older two, the youngest didn't, for a year and a half.
It's awful.
All day at school.
I used to get yelled at because I go into places where they would tell me to wear a mask and I wouldn't do it. They would yell at me. And I was so passive aggressive about it. I'm like, oh, you're still doing that stupid shit? And I would literally say that to them. I'm like, you know, that's a total farce, right? You're still doing that stupid shit? And they're like,
I don't like that. I feel like it's unduly antagonistic I'm an on a person who's not making the rules.
I'm an asshole. So let us know your thoughts on this in the chat below. How do you feel about masks now that the science is settled, New York Times? What do you think about this study, New York Times?
Well, the thing is that a lot of this science had existed all along and was suppressed. Furthermore, you know, while social media was suppressing these stories, they were allowing people to make fun of people who didn't want to wear a mask for these very reasons. There were plenty of asthmatics, people saying, I have asthma, I can't wear a mask, who were like punched in the face at a Walgreens.
Yeah, you're like, you're a loser for not wearing a mask. People would come up and yell at people in stores. We saw those videos of like, look at this guy not wearing a mask. Right. Look at this guy not wearing a mask. It's like, no, I don't want to do it. We know. I just finished reading a book on breathing. I don't forget the name of it off the top of my head, but it's in my Goodreads list, but it was really good. And read it at the beginning of the year about how you're actually supposed to breathe. You're never, ever supposed to breathe through your mouth. Ever, ever, ever. It's awful for you. And so imagine wearing these masks that are like pinching your nose and cutting off the main flow of air. You're not supposed to ever breathe through your mouth. And so of course, I'm doing it now because I'm speaking. They actually say that people who like sing and speak for a living, like teachers end up having like more problems because they're speaking for like 8 hours a day.
Yeah. And singers too.
And singers as well. So the science is in on that actually. So there, all of these studies, all of these people pushing these mask mandates were literally counteracting the known science that had existed for decades, thousands of years, in fact, going back to Native Americans studying historical cultures about breathing and how they would breathe through their mouth, they would breathe through their nose on purpose because of disease and other things. So anyway, let us know your thoughts on that. I'm going to take a deep breath.
Okay.
Rusa.
Yeah, I think that the fact that we're arguing about war and China and birth control and things like that absolutely prevents us from pushing politicians to say, why did you ask us to do that? What was the science around it? Because it is more and more apparent in hindsight that they never had any.
We've got more news to get to here on your Tuesday. We're going to look at why in the world are Israelis fighting in Ukraine? Why is that story being buried and suppressed and no one's talking about it? Not only fighting in Ukraine, but dying in Ukraine, as Ukraine is about to lose that war. That's a question worth answering. We'll get there in a second. But it's no secret, if you're tuned in right now, you know experts are predicting a recession headed our way. Layoffs already happening. The government ready to print more money, further devaluing the U.S. dollar. And of course, this week, guys, we're going to have the debt ceiling debate. Like, will the U.S. government default on its debt? The ECB, the head of the ECB, the European Central Bank, saying, I hope not. United States, I have faith in you that you're going to increase your debt limits once again. Just keep printing more money, keep printing more money, keep printing more money. Last year was terrible for investors, of course, unless you were invested in precious metals. Today, Natalie sent me a text, said, what was the Google search results for the first time? They've reached a new high, Google search results.
Google search results for how to buy gold were through the roof.
Yeah. So people searching for how to buy gold, how to buy precious metals right now to protect themselves as a hedge against inflation, as a preservation of wealth. Our friends at Lear Capital can help you get set up with that. Buying gold, having it shipped directly to your house, silver as well. And so all you need to do is call their 1-800 number. It's right there on your screen. We'll call 1-800-613-3557. So you can call Lear at 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. LearRedacted.com, and you're going to get $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase when you open your account. And they'll help you get set up with their free gold and silver investor guide too when you call them and see if it's a good fit for you or not. It is for me. I had a friend, a good dear friend, who I spoke for like an hour today, and he said I gotta get set up with some Lear gold right now. He said, I'm really worried about what's happening with the dollar. And I told him like how to store it and all of that sort of stuff. So he's going to get some Lear gold and Lear silver right now sent to his house. So again, go call 1-800-613-3557 or go to LearRedacted.com. Get your free gold and silver investor's guide and get up to $15,000 in free bonus metals with a qualified purchase. All right, we've got more news to get to. We're going to talk about this Israeli story, but there's a lot of things we're going to say in this story that we can't say on YouTube. There's a lot of things we're going to talk about that we're not going to be able to say on YouTube because we would get in trouble. And they would block us and take us down. So we're not going to do that story on YouTube. We're going to go somewhere else. The stream will continue right here. There's the link where the stream will continue right there. That's where we're headed right now. So the stream will continue unfettered. You can come over and join us if you'd like. It's totally up to you. We're not telling you what to do. because YouTube doesn't like that. But it's you're a person of free will, right? You can make any decision you want. So if you want to see this story and this coverage of Israel fighting in Ukraine, we're going to do a deep dive on that story right now. So come on over. Come on over, and the stream will continue right now. If you choose not to, though, here on YouTube, we'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time right here on YouTube. But anyway, come on over, guys. The water is warm. The stream will continue right now unfettered. All right. Thank you. Bye, YouTube. Good to see all of you guys.
Fetterman.
Unfetterman. Yeah, John Fetterman. What's going on? Do you see him show up at the Senate crazy? Last week? He shows up, comes back after that like weird hospital stay for like 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
No votes at all. People are like, what's going on? And they do that weird photo op inside the whatever. And he comes back, shows up like in shorts and a hoodie and rolls in. Like, you think your first day back, I'm a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
I put on a suit and tie. And I'm going to the Capitol building.
I think some people just think they've got to look and they got to stick with it. Like Zelensky and his, baby poop green.
I'm in a bunker.
That's planned because I think Fetterman gets sympathy out of that outfit. I think because of everything that's going on, like I think he won the sympathy vote to get in there in the first place.
Yeah.
I suppose.
He's different. He doesn't wear suits. So he's an outsider.
Or he's not well, and this is, like a woman who just had a baby, like this is all I can get into.
I just had a hernia operation. I'm just wearing sweatpants.
Yeah.
Like that's all I got on me. Yeah.
Right.
You think he'd be wearing some funky hat then, since it all seems to be things with his head.
I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. When I had my babies, I had this, this bathing suit cover up pants. They weren't really pants. They were pretty transparent, but it was the only thing. And so I was wearing these pants. My mom would be like, "You can see through those." And I'm like, "I don't care. They fit and I'm wearing them."
It's like a little window.
They were just like this sheer black pants. And my mom's like, "That's a bathing suit cover up. You shouldn't wear those with your underwear." It's like, I can't help it. Nothing else fits.
I'm just rolling around. I feel like crap. I just want to.
It looked like I was always in maternity bathing wear.
You're like, it's either this or a muumuu. I'm just going to throw in a muumuu. Actually, a muumuu sounds really comfortable.
It is.
I might actually get one of those to sleep in.
My grandma used to get it for us for our birthdays because I'm Hawaiian and that's what we do.
Don't you already have one of those? What are those called? The blanket that you wear? The
Snuggie?
Snuggie.
I do have a Snuggie in my office. It's a University of Pittsburgh Snuggie, my alma mater. Yeah, I don't know. The dog has like co-opted it somewhere. So
I think just one day you need to do a full show in your Snuggie just once. Just think that would be.
We should get redacted Snuggies.
Yeah, there you go.
We should make redacted Snuggies. Then I would get it. We have a redacted store.
Then you wouldn't even need to wear pants. And we could do like a guess, like which show are we not wearing pants?
Yes.
or clothes at all.
You would know if we weren't in clothes.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing any shoes.
I could get away with it.
Yeah, Philip, you could.
Philip, the man of mystery.
I might be naked right now. You don't know. You don't know.
Yeah. How are you pressing the buttons?
I know.
I am barefoot right now. That's how I roll. I'm so rebellious.
All right, we got more news to get to. We're going to talk about these Israelis fighting in Ukraine. But first,
we want to tell you about our friends at PHX. Now, with banks collapsing and the turbulent state of the stock market, millions of Americans have watched their retirement savings disappear. I want to share with you a unique investment opportunity that is not only protecting retirement savings, but investors are also seeing consistent yield and growth. Phoenix Capital Group is offering high-value U.S. oil and gas investments through their corporate bonds. It's a way for people to invest in energy assets and diversify their portfolio. Yield is ranging from 8 to 12% APY, paid monthly with different qualifications and maturity dates. That's Phoenix Capital Group. They are a tech-led energy company owning in some of the most lucrative basins across America. Investors' capital, along with their own capital, goes towards cash flow positive oil and gas projects. They had the choice of offering a significantly lower interest rate and paying the difference to middlemen, but decided to break the mold and build stronger investments directly to investors. These 8 to 12% corporate bonds are higher than CDs or annuities, often more than double the typical yields. So if you're looking for an alternative investment with sizable yields and monthly payment options, we recommend checking out Phoenix Capital Group's bond offerings. To learn more, download their free investor guide today at phxonredacted.com. That's phxonredacted.com. And let them know that you heard it from us. One more time, phxonredacted.com.
Well, on this show, we've been covering all of the foreign mercenaries fighting inside of Ukraine as the Ukrainian army has been largely decimated. New numbers showing anywhere between 400 and 600 Ukrainian soldiers killed per day in Ukraine. So who's left to do the fighting comes down to foreign mercenaries. We've talked about ISIS members fighting in Ukraine. We've talked about all sorts of foreign mercenaries from different countries fighting in Ukraine. And now we're learning that Israeli nationals are there, potentially hundreds of Israeli nationals fighting in Ukraine. How in the world does this happen? Redacted correspondent Dan Cohen has this story. Dan, this, why aren't we hearing about this at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. Why there's been such a small amount of media coverage of the unofficial Israeli role in Ukraine to this point. Of course, officially, Israel has declined to send weapons to Ukraine because of its own geopolitical considerations with respect to Russia's role in Syria, Israel's neighbor to the north, which it frequently bombs. But unofficially, Israel has a small but important role in Ukraine, where, as you said, there's a new investigation from Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, that shows that potentially hundreds of Israeli nationals are fighting inside Ukraine, in the Donbass, of course, and have been fighting there, as well as against Russia. So in December of last year, 2022, a Ukrainian-Israeli national, he has both nationalities, named Alexander Dubovik, was killed in action in Bakhmut by Russian forces. And he is one of at least 10, or as many as 16, Israeli nationals that have been killed fighting for Ukraine, according to this investigation in Haaretz. Not all of them have Ukrainian nationality as well as Israeli. The British Israeli, Yonatan Shenkin, for example, was killed in action too, but several hundred of them. I mean, that's quite a large amount. And they've actually been, Israelis have been involved in these events in Ukraine since 2013 and the violent riots that led up to the Maidan coup. Back in 2014, the Jewish news agency reported on a former Israeli officer, military officer, that played a leading role in the violence that ousted Viktor Yanukovych, the Ukrainian president at the time. This ex-officer led a group of 40 Ukrainian militants and five Israelis known as the Blue Helmet Unit. They modeled themselves after UN peacekeepers, but were involved in heavy amounts of violence. What's especially amazing is this group that included five Israelis and was led by an Israeli ex-Israeli military officer was under the direction of Svoboda, which is the neo-fascist political party headed by Oleh Tiyanbok, who has publicly stated that Ukraine is ruled by a Jewish Muscovite party, like a Jewish Russian party, just classic Nazi propaganda. Here we have an image of Tiyanbok giving the Sieg Heil salute. He's a hardened Nazi. And then here he is meeting with good old President Joe Biden, giving a hearty, warm handshake. And you can see President Biden's big grin, a real honor to meet this Nazi. There were also prominent Zionist NGOs involved in the Maidan coup that honestly it was pretty surprising to me. The American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee, Hillel, which is an on-campus Zionist group, and Limud. All of these are just mainstream pro-Israel NGOs. And according to this investigation, this article from back in 2014, they were, quote, really active in offering support as well as, quote, organizing the barricades. So you have mainstream Jewish American Zionist NGOs actively partaking in the coup against the Ukrainian government. And then one of the most stunning pictures that I've come across is this. Here's the flag. Here's a Star of David, which is the symbol of Judaism, the religion, and what Israel uses, over the red and black flag originally used by the World War II era paramilitary, the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, or UPA, which murdered between 50 and 100,000 Jews and ethnic Poles. Even the Polish government, the NATO member, called this a genocide in 2016. So today, that red and black flag is used by Right Sector, the neo-fascist paramilitary group in Ukraine that was, of course, involved in the... It was responsible for a lot of the violence in 2014 and has an official role today. And so this guy, this soldier, his name is Natan Khazin. He's laying in front of this flag with his rifle, his weapon, and you have the red and black, basically a Nazi flag with a Star of David. It's just wild. This guy, Natan Khazin, was a founder of the Azov Regiment, another straight-up neo-Nazi battalion. And today, he is the advisor of head of general security of the armed forces of Ukraine. He has a very high-ranking position.
How does this happen? It's crazy to think. I mean, how in the world does this happen? How do you have Jews partnering up with neo-Nazis? Like, what world am I living in where this is acceptable?
Right, exactly. I mean, I think to the vast majority of Ukrainian Jews, it was not. And in fact, you know, if you look at the statements they were making in 2014, as this Nazi-infested regime was coming to power, thanks to, you know, the U.S.'s backing, they were terrified. Jewish communities and leaders in Ukraine were scared. There were attacks on synagogues and Jewish shops. They were being vandalized. They didn't know if the police would actually step in to stop these kinds of attacks, and if it was going to be some kind of a pogrom, basically, you know, kind of in World War II style pogroms that Jews in Ukraine suffered, and they were heinous. In the protests, there were reports of copies of Mein Kampf and the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, anti-Semitic propaganda being distributed, and Jewish leaders were telling their followers to leave the country. So, yeah, I mean, to your question, how does this even happen? How do you get Jews fighting alongside neo-Nazis? Well, the way to understand it is, firstly, we have to understand that Zionism is not Judaism. Zionism is a political movement. Well, of course, Judaism is a religion. Zionism is a European nationalist movement that emerged alongside other European nationalisms that saw race and ethnicity and nationality as inseparable. And Zionism basically wanted to say, Jews cannot be in Europe. Jews are not part of European nations, and we have to form our own nation. And so in order to do that, they took the mythology, the religious precepts of Judaism, and borrowed them for Zionism. So they said, for instance, like in Judaism, there's the belief that there will be a messianic era when God decides, and all of the Jews of all the world will go back to the Holy Land. Okay? And that became like, Zionists said, no, we're just going to do that ourselves. It's not a holy, religious, godly thing. We're just going to do it ourselves. And so they used the symbols and the logic and the concepts of Judaism to create this nationalist movement. That nationalist movement of Zionism, a lot of its roots are in Ukraine. And so because they basically sought to create a European national movement very similar to Ukrainian nationalism, it has a lot of similar characteristics. Actually, the founder of revisionist Zionism, Vladimir Zev Jabotinsky, he is Ukrainian, and he started the movement, revisionist Zionism, that became the Likud party, which is Benjamin Netanyahu's party that rules Israel today. So they're kind of, you know, birds of a feather flock together. And even Jabotinsky and the revisionist movement sought to emulate Mussolini's fascist Italy. So there's a lot of elements of fascism in there, in you know, both Zionism and Ukrainian nationalism too. And many members of the Israel, the pre-state Zionist militia called the Haganah, which carried out the ethnic cleansing of Palestine in 1947 and 48, were actually trained in Ukrainian militias that fought against the Soviet Union from 1917 to 1921. Wow. So then they went to Palestine and turned that experience against Palestinians and created the Israeli state in Palestine. So like basically we have twin ideologies here, and you see these dynamics playing out again today, where you have Zionists fighting alongside neo-Nazis against Russia. It's really just kind of history repeating itself in a lot of ways.
And a lot of these fighters, according to the reports, are not even on the books. They're sort of off the books. They're not even officially registered. So it's hard to even get a full accounting of these people and who they are, much the same that we're seeing in the United States. There's really a lack of accounting of them and how they're actually registered and showing up on the battlefield here. And also, when they die, you know, what sort of awareness do the Israeli people have that, hey, there's Israelis dying in Ukraine in a war that they're not even a part of?
Right, exactly. There's very, very little reporting. I mean, this Haaretz report is really the first investigation into Israelis dying in Ukraine and what they're actually doing there. And I mean, overall, Israelis don't know about it, though they are overwhelmingly, the Israeli public is very much in support of the Ukrainian side. There are pockets that support the Russian side, and largely because a lot of Israelis there are many, many Ukrainians there who came there and are, and remain sympathetic to the ideology of Ukrainian nationalism.
Unbelievable. We'll see if this gets any broader coverage anytime soon. Dan Cohen reporting for us in Washington on this story with additional foreign mercenaries fighting in Ukraine. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Clayton.
And I just want to thank all of you for subscribing and being a part of our great community here. You know, we couldn't do this show without you, and it's now more important than ever to be able to support independent media. You saw what happened to Tucker. You saw how voices are being silenced. So please, please, please subscribe to the channel here and also subscribe to our daily newsletter. Again, if you go to redacted.inc, we both have the newsletter there that you can sign up for free. And then if you also want to support independent journalism, you can click on our community button right there and become a Redacted Rebel VIP. You get access to exclusive videos, live streams that we're doing specifically for our community. So please, you can sign up. And for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism. This is a totally free show, but if you want to support independent journalism, support what we do here, you can do that as well. No pressure. It's totally up to you. But if you want to, we would totally welcome it. So thank you guys so much for watching on this Tuesday. We hope you have a wonderful evening, and we'll see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Bye, everyone.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.